T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Okay, if we're giving random shout-outs to Chicago radio shows, Parkins and Spiegel, obviously the best.
Afternoons on the Score.
I think he's the greatest owner in sports. And that, of course, is Jerry Reinsdorf. The club he has put together right now are fine. And he created what is a family atmosphere. I mean, it was like a family for the most part all the years I was there. And two guys sitting next to him, Bob Grimm and Darren Jackson, they're like surrogate sons to us. I love them both like sons. And it's one of those things, Scott Reifert, and there's so many that I became really close to. I didn't like them. I grew to love them. And every day I went to the ballpark, I tried to make sure that I stopped by as many offices as I could just to say hello and let them know that, you know, we love you guys.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on the Score.
That was Hawk Harrelson, who won the Ford Frick Award in December of 2019. But it took until this past Sunday for Hawk to be there in Cooperstown at Doubleday Field and get the Ford Frick Award. And that is from that speech on Sunday. We haven't even had a chance to talk about it. It's me, Matt Spiegel, on the Parkins and Spiegel Show. And with Chris Ronji here today, longtime Sox pre and post guy when the Sox were right here on the Score. Chris and I both have wanted to talk to the great Bob Grimm. And we have a chance to talk to Bob Grimm right now. And Bob is name dropped there in the speech. The longtime Senior Director of Business Development and Broadcasting, 31 years with the White Sox, retired in the spring, and joins us right now on the Score to talk about Hawk and more. Bob Grimm, thank you for the time. How you doing? Hope all is well.
Well, I'm great. You guys are too kind. Matt and Chris, good to talk to you guys and speak with you again. It's been a while, and I miss people like yourselves in the game, but the lead-in with that Hawk, the comments he made about the Sox being family, that epitomizes Hawk. I mean, he is all about family, and the White Sox were truly family to him. So kudos to Jerry, how he runs the club and so forth. But exactly what Hawk said in the lead-in, that's the way he feels about the White Sox.
And it really is such an interesting environment that there are so many characters and so many personalities. Not that that doesn't exist in front offices around the country, but I always get the feeling that it's a little bit different there. It's a little bit different on the South side. And then you add people like Hawk to the mix, who were a big part of that. It was a really interesting place to be around for so long. And I'm sure it was for you, too.
Well, you're right, Chris. And I think what the telltale sign to me was when players would leave and be traded and hate to see him go, but then you'd run into him again at an event we were holding for alumni or whatever, and they always said that the team they enjoyed playing for the most, because it was like family, was the White Sox. It's just because the way Jerry has his people treat the players, the front office people. I mean, he's so loyal, so good to others, and it's just, you look at all the people that have been there. I can't think of any other club. And being around baseball for 37 years, I spent 7 years in the commissioner's office in New York City. Wow. And you look at how many teams really had the longevity that we had of so many front office executives and even players that wanted to stay and take that so-called home team discount because of the way they liked not only the club but Chicago with the fans and everyone else associated with the ball club.
We're talking to Bob Grimm here on the Score. Bob, I think we need to let people know exactly what it is you did for a living for so long because, they know the characters. They know Hawk and they knew Farmio and now DJ and Len Casper and Benetti and Stone and, you know, and what Ranger, what you did. But and even like Jamokes Like Me, when me and Mac would broadcast from the broadcast booth on a Thursday getaway game and hang out in the booth, Bob Grimm took care of us. What would you say was your role with all those broadcasters and with the broadcast entities? Tell people what your job was.
It basically was to oversee the broadcasting aspect of our announcers, our relationship with our rights holders, with the score and with, you know, NBC Sports Chicago and WGN TV at the time. I mean, it really was. I was the liaison between the media, our rights holders, and our announcers. And I was so fortunate. I really feel that the announcing group that we had in the years that I was there were some of the best in baseball. I would listen to my SiriusXM radio and the other ball games and so forth across the country, and I listened to these announcers, and I go, boy, we are so fortunate to have some great announcers come through the White Sox that were such true fans of not only the baseball, but had a love and a passion for the White Sox. And they, you know, I hate to say it, but they were true homers. I mean, that's what our fans, that's what the Southside fan wants to hear, is a guy who really loves and wants to see the Sox do their best all the time. And even if it's the expense of the other team, you know, making errors or not pitching well, our guys really were very good at what they did. And we were fortunate that some great announcers come through Chicago.
Hey, Bob, how much of your job ended up being taking care of the predilections of the broadcasters and what they needed? Like, do you get Hawk his Red Bull at the right time? You know, take care of Farmio and DJ in their booth, which was always a party, constantly having guests and buffets on the tables there. Like, you had to take care of a lot of that stuff, too, right?
Well, it to an extent, Matt, and it wasn't really getting them things as much as just making sure they had what they needed to be to do their job and to give our fans a good broadcast. I think when you look at the Ed Farmers of the world, God rest his soul, I mean, it's just he always wanted to do things for others. And, you know, all our guys were that way, whether it be, you know, Jason today and Steve and Tom Pachorik and you know, Darren Jackson, all those guys, even Len Casper now. I mean, I was with him for about a month or a month and a half, and he's a baseball guy. And you know, he just quickly adapted to the White Sox family aspect. And I think that's what makes it so great a place to work, is that there's people who care. And it's not just a business. It's a family business that really people want to see the team do well. And it resonates on down from Jerry to the front office to our announcers, and then we hope our fans feel the same way. That's what we try to do.
For a time being, I got to see some of that inside stuff with the announcers, and I know that because you had such close contact with everybody, with all of the guys who have been in the broadcast booth, you have seen and heard a lot of things. Is there something either involving Hawk or our guy Farmio, who you mentioned him, I love and I miss him. Is there a story you feel like you can relay to us that maybe people don't know?
Oh, there's probably actually two, and I'll start with Farmio first because DJ can attest to this. I mean, he would always have food brought up to the booth, and he would sit there and eat, and it was almost like he was a Wolverine with no food catcher. I mean, the food would be just spewing out of his mouth all over his working area, all over the floor. And DJ would look at him and go, what are you doing? And that's just Ed. That was Ed. He shoveled food down like anyone else I've never seen before. That was Ed's personality. And it was just like he knew that he had a limited time to eat. And instead of, you know, eating it piece by piece, he had to get it done, eat the whole thing within like 30 seconds. So you can imagine what the booth looked like in his working area. As far as Hawk, I mean, the big things with him is sometimes I have to rein him in when he would get on umpires. I mean, you all remember the Wegner incident where one of our batters got hit, yeah. And then the next inning one of our guys hit one of their batters, and Hawk didn't think it was intentional, and he was all, Wegner, what are you doing? What the hell are you doing?
And yep. What are you doing, Wegner?
There it is.
And then he would shut it down. He gets so ticked off, he would shut it down for an inning or so, and you have to get him back on track. Or Joe West calling the three balks and, like, throwing first base on pickoffs on Burley. You know, but now the ironic thing is Hawk and Joe West, and they'll tell you they're best of friends. They live near each other in Orlando, and they go to lunch. Their wives are friends and so forth. I mean, but that's how Hawk is. It's the spur-of-the-moment thing where, again, you're attacking the White Sox, you're attacking Hawk. And that's the way he went about his game.
He took it so personally and so emotionally. And, you know, I remember we timed it one time. I think it was a minute and 2 seconds of silence from Hawk after after a game-losing moment, a walk-off home run. Right. Were you ever there for one of those 1 minute of silence? And did you get nervous when Hawk, like, emotionally, was he going to recover and start doing the job again? Were you nervous?
Oh, sure. I mean, I was two boots down, Matt. You know, it was one of those things where it's like, okay, is he there? Did he get sick? Did he leave the booth? I'd run down there, and he'd just be sitting there staring out at the field. And, you know, whether it was Steve or DJ, whomever his partner was at the time, had to just, you know, take over. But it was just he took it so personal. And again, I think that's epitomizes our fan base, how loyal they are. And when things like that happen to our club, Hawk was the guy. You knew as soon as you turned on the game, whether it be the second, fifth, or eighth inning, whether we're winning or losing. You can tell by the his voice acumen, how he was treating the game at that time. So I think Hawk is one of those announcers you're not going to see again anymore. You don't see announcers like that today anymore that are true homers for their team. And most announcers today, I feel, treat the game as a national broadcast. They'll make their opinions known, whether it's good or bad for the club. If you notice, I don't think you can ever recall, when did Hawk ever rip our club? I mean, there was it never happened. I mean, it was just one of those things where, you know, he may say, oh, we're not hitting right now, or this or that, or that pitch shouldn't have been thrown. But, you know, he never really took off and said, you know, we need to do this. So we need to have this run a go or whatever. I mean, it's just he was so into the game, and he really epitomized what a true announcer, a throwback announcer was, in the way of a homer for your club. And that's what fans wanted to hear.
I think, Bob, one of the ultimate homer moments in a broadcast booth ever is when he left the booth to go check on Todd Frazier. when Todd hurt himself. When that happened, I think the rest of us are like, what is he doing? What were you thinking when that happened?
Well, I mean, you know, thankfully Steve was able to take over and handle it, but it's like I think he even said in the broadcast, I'm going down to the training room to check on Todd.
He did.
And it was on the road, and we're like, I'm in the office listening and watching. And I'm like, oh, no, he's not really doing that. You know, because I think he still thought, you know, this is the modern-day baseball where they send the message up to the booth as to what the situation is. No, he had to go down and go into the training room and actually talk to Hermie at the time and whoever else was on hand to find out exactly what happened to him. So, again, but that's spur of the moment stuff like that where you just didn't know what he was going to do. But again, I think our fans related to that because that was Hawk. He would do things like that, and that's what made him who he is.
I'm going downstairs. You take over, okay?
Our guest is Bob Grimm, longtime White Sox executive. If the name sounds familiar to baseball fans, but you didn't know this guy, for whatever reason, that's because his uncle, also named Bob Grimm, was the Rookie of the Year for the New York Yankees in 1954 and played in two World Series for the Yankees. Got the final out of the 1957 All-Star Game. Like, what do you remember about his big league career, and what kind of imprint does that make on you, Bob Grimm, who ends up being a catcher for St. John's and having a life in baseball after that?
Well, thanks for remembering, Matt, because we were, you know, DJ and I toured the hall when we were up there this past weekend, and I hadn't been there in 40 years. And for those that haven't been there, it's a must-do for any baseball fan. You get chills when you walk through there, especially in the room where all the plaques are of the players that have been inducted. But, yeah, I would say that although I was very young, I vaguely remember my uncle pitching at Yankee Stadium. I was maybe 5 years old. You know, he was 54 Rookie of the Year, and then in 64, he was done after a rotator cuff injury, which nowadays wouldn't have been a big thing, but back then it was. It pretty much finished your career. And then just going on, I was very fortunate enough. I caught my whole life, which I'm paying for it now with my legs and my knees. But, you know, baseball got me to where I'm at. I've been blessed in that regard. I've met people along the way, like Jerry Reinsdorf. And most people remember a guy named Bob Fischel, who actually hired me in the league office. And I worked for Lee McPhail, who was the president of the league at the time. So I've come across some really, really great people that I owe a lot of my career to, and I've just been very blessed and fortunate, but it's been a fun ride.
So a quick follow-up. As a catcher, did you catch Frank Viola at St. John's? I think you did. So and then did you play against Don Cooper? Could you tell people what Don Cooper was like as a college baseball player at Hofstra, I believe, Bob?
He actually went to New York Tech.
Okay, thank you.
I caught Viola and also caught a guy by the name of John Franco, who I think still may hold the record for lefty relief number of saves and for a reliever in the National League. But we had a great club. We went to the College World Series in 78. And Coop, he played for a small, tiny school called New York Tech on Long Island. And St. John's was the big powerhouse in baseball. We would play them. We usually would kill them. But the times that Coop pitched, he was, and I told him this, and you know, I said he was a hard ass. I mean, he had no trouble throwing at you and throwing inside or hitting you. He had no problem doing that. You'd see me at the tobacco stains all over the front of his jersey and so forth. Then I run into him when I get to the White Sox, in spring training, and you know, we rehashed all those moments. And even in high school, I faced him. He was at a rival high school of ours in Queens. So we went way back, and it was always fun going over memories that we had of playing together in high school and college.
Long hair, right? Coop had long hair.
Yeah, he did.
As a pitcher?
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Long hair? Didn't Coop have long hair?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Tobacco?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. He had that real long, scraggly hair, you know, and just looked like the type of guy you didn't want to get mad.
I feel like we can't let you go without asking about Moose. Moose Skowron spent a lot of time up in that broadcast booth. And while you were, you know, helping out all of the broadcasters doing their duty, you also were Moose's guy. Like, you were his liaison. I need a Moose story because I've got a million of them going through my mind right now. And I can't think of one I like most.
Well, Chris, you remember. I mean, those are some of the great times when Moose and Bill Melton and Dave Wills and so forth, we'd hang up in that booth, and Melton and Moose would go at it. And I remember one time Melty looking at Moose going, boy, you're pretty ugly, Moose, you know that? And Moose shot right back at him, well, you're no prize either. And they would just all the time be shooting barbs at each other and just getting on themselves. But it was all in good humor, and I can – the times that we've had up there, I used to have belly gut laughs almost every night when those two were around. And I just talked to Melton before because when we were up in the Hall of Fame, DJ and I sat at the same table with Al Michaels and his wife for the dinner afterwards. And, boy, what a great time that was in the stories he told. So, again, I've been fortunate to run across the people I have and to work for a club like the White Sox and Jerry Reinsdorf.
When you stepped away, Bob Grimm, Jason Benetti tweeted about you when he was at Homeward Flossmoor. His mom wrote Bob Grimm to ask if her son, an aspiring announcer, could visit the White Sox broadcast booths. And you introduced young Jason at that time to John Rooney and Ed Farmer. He said he sat in the booth, watched them work, and it was, quote, to quote Jason, a generous act that propelled a life. Bob's done a lot of that, unquote. That's pretty cool. You feel that familiarity and kinship when you listen to Jason work? He's awfully good.
Jason is great. He's going to be great for a long time. I hope he stays with the White Sox for a long time because, again, you have a hometown boy like that who's very good at what he does and also does some national stuff. He's just phenomenal. And I think he and Steve do some of the best work on TV as a tandem, as well as Len and DJ right now. So I think Sox fans are fortunate to have both TV and radio broadcasters are some of the, probably, in my opinion, the best in the business.
I'm going to say this last thing about Bob Grimm before we say goodbye. When people always, they talk about somebody they like, they say, that's the nicest guy I've ever met. I'm going to tell you this right now. There is no doubt about this. Bob is legitimately the single nicest person I have ever met. He absolutely refuses, and I mean refuses, to allow you to hold a door for him. That's not
Chris,
a door.
You're too kind.
It's weird.
And I live by the motto, it doesn't cost anything to be nice. And you know, the people I've come across, and I just feel so blessed to meet people like yourself, Matt. You know, it's been a great run for me. I thoroughly enjoyed it. There's memories I will never forget. And I can't believe that I have been with the likes of some great people in this game. And baseball's always been special to me, and it's been a blessing to have been working in Major League Baseball and the White Sox.
Well, you're one of those great people in this game. Bob, thank you for the time. Thanks for being kind to me when I would come by and need a place to sit every once in a while and let me in that booth and watch a game. And our boss, Mitch Rosen, says hello, and we all wish you
Mitch,
well.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. We all wish you nothing but the best, and nice to reconnect. Thank you.
Matt, Chris, and Mitch, thank you very much. I miss you guys, and thanks for having me on.
You got it. That's Bob Grimm, longtime broadcast exec, and the nicest dude in the history of dudes.
It's legit. I really don't know anybody. So if you ever hear me say this is the nicest person I've ever met in my life, I'm lying.
You're lying.
Because it's
take care of yourself.
Yeah.
That's Moose Gower.
Thank you. DJ, nice seeing you
to
again.
The sixth inning.
I got my banana split.
Moose.
Tanny, you loved hearing Moose and getting to meet Moose.
Oh, God.
Yeah, like what Bob was just talking about there. And Bob, I will second what Ranji was just saying. Like, you know, when you're a low-level part-time producer just going to help out during a broadcast, you're already mooching off all the free food. And, you know, you're hanging out up there trying to not be seen and stay out of the way. But then Bob Grimm goes out of his way to make sure that everyone, including yourself, is comfortable. Like, that's like one of the best things that you can ask for. And what a great guy. And, you know, those nights, Ranji, we were up there a lot of those times with the Melton versus Moose thing. Like, that was a real thing. And the gut laughs that Bob described, like, that's definitely 100% true. Like, that's stuff that I'll never forget. You know, Moose's little stories about, you know, playing locally for Weber High School and then being with the Yankees playing with Mickey Mantle. Just awesome stuff that you'll never forget.
And the funny thing is that Moose and Mickey were, like, completely opposite personalities. Moose, like, kind of a homebody, just didn't want to do anything. And obviously, we know Mickey famously completely different.
But you Moose, know, go ahead, Ranger.
No, I mean, Moose was, he, like, the kind of personality he was. And for whatever reason, here's a guy who played with, you know, one of the most historic teams in history. And people did not have any problem giving him a hard time. And he took it. It was just the funniest dynamic. To hear Farmio give him crap, or to hear DJ give him a hard time, or Stoney. Steve Stone is really funny when he was talking to Moose Skowron. Just the amount of crap they would give him, like, you guys, leave me alone.
But Moose had one up on everyone because he had his collection of Mickey Mantle signed baseballs.
Yeah, he had. Oh, I don't know. Did you know this, Matt?
That's some lottery tickets right there, huh?
Oh, my, so before Mickey died, He gave Moose, like, he signed, I think, like 100 baseballs and said,
God.
Moose, sell these and make some money after I die. And he had them. And I'm sure they're all gone now, but
wow,
he gave those
amazing.
To him. Yeah.
So every once in a while when you need something, you sell one of those balls.
That's how you would get Moose to leave the room is, hey, can I get one of those Mickey Mantle balls? You're like, I'm leaving. And then he'd walk out.
Paulie would hit like a rocket shot into the left field bullpen. That's how I used to hit him.
I envy that. I envy you guys getting a chance to hang out with those guys. And it's like, this is the thing. This is, of course, the not so secret thing now, but about being comfortable at a ballpark when you're somebody who grows up and you want to be around baseball. And then you're like, oh, my God, I have a press pass. What do I do? Bob Grimm and people like that are the keepers of the comfort. You know, they're the ones who you have to actually get to know. And they're the ones who actually have the power, while guys like us are like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm here. What am I supposed to do? And like Tanny's saying, he made you comfortable. And what a gift that was. And what a gift that ended up being for the listeners or the viewers when Grimm would make us comfortable and we could actually do a better job at our jobs.
Well, I'm glad we got a chance. And this that we started this thing off to talk about Hawk, but I'm glad we got to talk about Bob because, and I know he got his tribute video at the beginning of the season, you know, when he retired, but more people should have known who he was and what he did. Bob was great.
670 The Score.
Still is great.
Agreed. 670 The Score is where you are. It's the Parkins and Spiegel Show. He is Ranji. I am Spiegel. Top of the hour, we'll talk to Mark Grody with the very latest from day one of Chicago Bears camp. But on the field, it appears that inactivity is the impending move, and Rangers got thoughts on that. So we'll get to that next on 670 The Score.
And we believe in this team. And how often are you going to be in the situation where you're so far up in your division.
There's been a lot more rumors about us, which I guess is probably just indicative of the time of the year. I got to say, for the first time in my experience, I've received text messages from reporters. Actually, no one on this call, I don't think, because I scan it. But I've received text messages from reporters saying, I'm confused. This other reporter reported that you were making this deal and you guys haven't announced anything yet. What's going on? Which was...
That is Rick Hahn talking about the texts that have been flying back and forth with reporters. It's Spiegel and Parkins. Actually, Parkins and Spiegel is the name of the show, but it's Spiegel and Ranji today. For the Parkins and Spiegel show. And the trade deadline is hot and heavy. Tyler Anderson, the Pittsburgh Pirates starter, apparently heading to the Philadelphia Phillies from the Pittsburgh Pirates in exchange for prospects. Andrew Chafin dealt last night from the Cubs to the Oakland A's. There are big-time rumors regarding the Cubs and the White Sox together that I've been hearing a lot of, that Bruce Levine wrote about today, that other folks have written about. I wouldn't be surprised if Ryan Tepera ends up on the White Sox, and that is one to follow. Certainly, maybe in exchange for a starting pitcher could be Jonathan Stever or Jimmy Lambert, something like that, in exchange for Ryan Tepera. But it's been a long time of waiting here for position players to maybe get dealt with the White Sox. But now Eloy Jimenez is back, 0-for-4 last night, in the lineup again tonight, playing left field. Luis Robert is beginning his rehab assignment in Charlotte tonight. So Luis Robert not far behind. So you'll get the somewhat convoluted reasoning from a lot of people that these are your deadline acquisitions, that Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert are your deadline acquisitions. And I know you, Chris Ranji, baseball thinker, talker, sports take haver, have opinions on such things.
Well, you mentioned the Tepera and or the Kimbrel rumor, which is really the first solid rumor we've heard about them in this trade deadline cycle. I haven't heard anything else. Now that
Adam
doesn't
Frazier,
mean they...
but what about Eduardo Escobar?
Well,
and Adam
I mean,
Frazier?
I think. Well, did they ever report that there was interest or that would be a good trade possibility for them? I had never heard anything like they were in talks or anything of the sort.
Bob Nightingale said that the Escobar deal was basically done.
Oh, that's right. He did say that.
But
yeah.
Then Escobar tweaked, was it the hamstring or whatever he tweaked? And then a White Sox pitcher that was going to be involved had a cortisone shot. That's what Nightingale had said. So that one faded away. But Frazier was all just rumor, and now he's in San Diego because everybody goes to San Diego.
Yeah, and I know the White Sox like to operate under secrecy, and they've been that way for, 15 or so years, which is totally understandable. I think all teams, for the most part, would rather be able to do that unless they're using it for leverage. But I really hope that we don't get to the end of this cycle, that we don't get past the end of the month, and they do say to us, well, we're getting Robert back, and we've got Jimenez back, and it's just like making two huge acquisitions at the deadline. I really hope that's not what happens, because if you look at what the team needs right now, a lot of people are going to argue it's second base. They need somebody who can play there every single day, and I agree with that. I think that's going to be the more difficult thing to pull off, but you can help that bullpen out a lot. And I don't know if Tepera is going to be the guy or Kimbrel. I can't see them trading for Craig Kimbrel.
No.
Seriously? I would love to have Hendricks and Kimbrel in a bullpen, but how are you going to play that? I mean, sounds like a where are you going to play him situation, but which one are you going to tell they can be the closer? I'm sorry, Maddie, but Hendricks told, Grody and I when we talked to him a couple of weeks ago that he'll pitch wherever, but do you want to make the guy who's been your really good closer all year just suddenly not your closer? I don't see how that dynamic would work. I'd love to have the two arms. I feel like you'd have a complication then.
You'd probably end up with a complication. And also, Craig Kimbrel is about as valuable a piece as there is
on the market,
at the trade deadline, on the market right now. I mean, Max Scherzer is a pitcher you could give the ball to for game one of the World Series, and he's on the market. But his contract is very complicated and will actually not cost a lot of money, but will probably cost you a lot in prospects. I mean, that's one and two. you know, Trevor Story's having the worst offensive year of his life, and he's throwing the ball away a bunch and having, I mean, Kimbrel is going to get you very, the White Sox don't want to give up what it will cost to get Craig Kimbrel
right.
at this deadline, because they're not going to give up Kopech or Crochet or Andrew Vaughn. And, you know, I don't think they have other prospects who are close enough to fit what the Cubs need. I don't think Yelky Cespedes is close enough. I don't think they have what it takes to get Craig Kimbrel.
And there is obvious precedent for the two teams to deal with each other. So, I mean, we've seen the White Sox and the Cubs with the Jose Quintana and the Jimenez deal. I mean, that's a really big deal. And prior to that, I think there was the David Aardsma was for Neil Kotz, right?
Wasn't that the deal? Yeah. I always think about Karchner and John Garland.
And the John Garland deal, yeah. So there is precedent for the two teams to deal with each other. It's just it's more likely it's Tapera than anything else, which for me, great. I mean, but you have to do something. You have to do something to make this team better. I think improving the bullpen is going to be the easiest thing to do. Mm-hmm. And maybe that satisfies everybody in the clubhouse, because I do believe in this. I believe that if you have a first-place team and they are approaching the deadline, and it's obvious they have some kind of need, wherever you want to debate the need to be the greatest, and you don't do anything prior to the deadline, I think the team internally hates that. I think they want to think that you as a front office believe in them. We believe in you so much.
Absolutely.
We went and got you this extra piece to go win. Not just for the rest of the regular season, but once you get to the playoffs. I think that is a really important thing to do for these guys.
I totally agree. That message absolutely matters, and you should be in the business of perfecting your roster for October, and you want your players to believe that's what you're doing. I think they've sent a couple messages that fit that so far with the DFAing of Adam Eaton. Like, we're just going to go ahead and play the best guys. Thank you so much. And the extension of Lance Lynn. Hey, if you're awesome and you're dependable and you want to be here, we're going to take care of you. Those kind of things. So I think they will. Well, let me ask you, would this satisfy them and would this satisfy you? If they do go out and get a bullpen arm, let's say it's a righty of consequence like Ryan Tapera or Daniel Hudson, you know, it's somebody with legit stuff that they could use in the eighth inning and or the seventh inning as needed. If they do that, is that enough? Or do you need to see a second base option as well? Because I got to tell you, from my perspective, I thought I was going to be happier with Danny Mendick than I am. And I thought I was going to be looking at this going like, I'm totally cool with extended time from Danny Mendick with this lineup here. But I look at it right now and I see I want Danny Mendick and Leury García as bench pieces.
Yes.
In October. I want that second baseman to be somebody I trust implicitly defensively and who will give me a good at-bat, preferably left-handed.
Well, ideally, this shouldn't be an either-or conversation. It should be, we need this and this, and we're going to do it because, again, we believe in this team. And how often are you going to be in the situation where you're so far up in your division that it's almost a foregone conclusion that what you're doing is getting ready for the playoffs?
Yeah.
You may not have the luxury of this next year or the year after or the year after that. So while you're here, why not take advantage of it the best you can and say, we're going to fix not just this bullpen thing, but we're also going to have somebody more stable at second base. I mean, to me, in an ideal world, that's what you go do. And I feel like that's how they should be operating. I get the sense, though, we're probably going to see an extra reliever in the pen, which is a good thing, but I don't think you want to do just a good thing here. I think you want to, is when this is all over, however the season finishes, if they get bounced in the first round of the playoffs, if they make it to the LCS, whatever it is, I think you want to know that they left nothing to chance.
That they did
before
everything
they got
they
to
could.
The deadline. They did everything they possibly could to help this team for this year. I think you have to do that if you're them.
Yeah, I think you do too. And it's Adam Frazier was the perfect fit. He really
was really good.
Just the style of the at bat, the solidity and the defense, and what he play the outfield too. So they need to do something else there. Andrew Vaughn is your right fielder tonight, as Eloy Jimenez is your left fielder tonight. It is good to get Vaughn more reps in right. He has shown the ability to be comfortable there, but that's obviously asking a lot. I'm totally okay with them not addressing the outfield depth. You've made it. You have survived. Yeah. Your left fielders, among all like left field contingents in the American League, the White Sox have the fourth highest OPS in left field in the American League. It's amazing. You have made it. You have survived doing everything you have done with Andrew Vaughn and with others. And Jake Berger and Gavin Sheets have done nice things for you. And Luis Robert will come back, and maybe Gavin goes away, or maybe Brian Goodwin goes away. We'll have to see
right.
exactly what they do. But they've done enough to withstand the outfield issues. But you got to add a bullpen arm, and I think a second baseman you trust, especially defensively.
I think when you're this team, and there's no guarantee that Robert or Jimenez are going to be good for sure the remainder of the season, but I will bank on it. I'll put my money that they are going to be good, because you have no choice, really. That's not the place you need to bolster. What you do is you address the areas you know for a fact you need addressing.
Yeah.
And I really look, I'll be half satisfied if they fill a bullpen need. I'll be half satisfied with that. But I'd be really happy, and I know a lot of Sox fans, pretty much everybody else, would be thrilled if they address both needs. And again, you give this team the message that we believe in you so much that we've addressed the areas of concern because we think you're going to go make a deep playoff run. Go do that.
Yeah.
Whatever it takes, make it happen.
A big trade involving a local team highlights the incredibly cold treatment from another team. I want to talk about that with you for a moment before Mark Grody and Bears stuff at the top of the hour. It's Parkins and Spiegel with Spiegs and Ranji on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Look at the Hawks. Defensively, where do they need to tighten things up?
The Hawks?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I...
Here's the thing, Chris Ranji. The Blackhawks are taking huge swings right now from a team-building perspective. They've needed a number one defenseman. They've just traded for Seth Jones. Lord knows they've needed a number one goalie. And apparently today they traded for Marc-Andre Fleury. He might not want to play here, and that is kind of a big deal. They picked up $7 million, helped out the Las Vegas Golden Knights, and the Hawks have the cap space right now because Seabrook and Shaw retired early. So it just cost the Hawks a very low-level prospect. They cost him a dude who had 1 point in 12 minor league games last year. But that's not what I want to discuss with you. I want to discuss this. Marc-Andre Fleury learned about this trade on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
He is the best player in the history of that franchise. The most beloved player for fans in Las Vegas. He was the number one pick in the NHL draft, spent 13 years in Pittsburgh, but then goes there from the beginning. He's like, they've marketed around him, have sold him. Fans love him. Number one selling jersey as a Golden Knight. He's like climbing up career leaderboards, and he's third right now in among the most winning goalies of all time. And they got to make a deal between him and Robin Leonard, and they make their choice and don't really even talk to him about it at all. That is historic, impressive levels of coldness by an award.
How does I don't even know how that happens. Like, how does it happen that you let somebody in the press find out before your guy finds out? I don't know if this is worse than, say, being on the air and then finding out via Twitter that your station is folding. That seems like a really bad thing to have happen to you.
Let's ask Ben Finfer or Alex Quigley about that.
I mean, probably worse, because at least if you're Marc-Andre Fleury, you've got a lot of money in the tank. You'll be okay for a while, and you can choose to retire if you don't want to.
Yeah, well, and he might retire, and I guess he had been talking about possibly retiring. So maybe the Vegas Golden Knights got a little pissed off at him. But still, man.
You can never be angry enough at a player for any reason to allow them to find out on Twitter that they have been traded somewhere else. It just is. Maybe, you know, I guess you can hear rumors that your name is out there as a possibility for being traded. That's one thing. But to learn that it's actually happened, that is unconscionable. I don't know how you as an organization allow that to happen. For an organization that has done really well in its first few years of existence, surprisingly well.
They picked
and it seemed
him
to be
the,
well run.
They picked him in the expansion draft in 2017. They're like, let me take that guy. And he's been the face of their entire freaking team. He just won the Vezina as the best goalie in the game. He didn't win a cup. He really wants to win a cup, and they haven't won a cup, and yada, yada. But, man, that is cold. I know it does happen. These days it does happen, but that seemed rather harsh.
Yeah, and I don't know, maybe he's playing leverage right now in some way, which if he's got any, and I don't know, I really don't even know what that could be, but if he has any at this particular moment, yeah, use it, bro. I mean, do whatever you think you can get out of this situation. Because the Hawks have to kind of know by tomorrow, don't they? If he's going to play or not, because the free agency period's coming up.
Yeah, they'd like to know. They'd like to know by tomorrow. So maybe they'll find out. It'd be pretty cool if he says, all right, okay, yeah, I will play there. All right.
Yeah.
It'd be a pretty rapid remake for the Hawks if they did that kind of thing. It is Parkins and Spiegel. It's me, Spiegel. It's him, Chris Ronji, right here on 670 The Score. What actually mattered from day one of Bears camp? Our guy Mark Grody joins us next, and I want to hear about the potential living arrangements of these two men. We'll do that next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.